This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Trainer Todd Pletcher has reached the stratosphere.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Moon over Miami for Bill Mott.
3,000 for trainer Mark Cassie.
Trainer D-Way Lucas, a 6th win.
And Bob Baffert with another incredible milestone.
But it was all for Chuck McGee.
Win number 1,000 for the great Trevor McCarthy.
Here's 2,000 for Nick Zito.
Steve Aspison is now North America's all-time leading trainer.
Now here's Mike Pena.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This, of course, is the show trainers listen to, and you are listening all across North America on Sirius 162, XM 207, streaming worldwide at horseracingradio.net, and, of course, available anywhere you get your podcasts each and every week. I'm Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, and today's guest first joined me on Trainer Talk in 2016 when he was working as an assistant to trainer Doug O'Neill. During that time, he had the chance to get a little bit of a taste of what those Derby roses are all about with horses like I'll Have Another, for example. And now he is hoping his Florida-bred son of Gervin, Seminole Chief, can punch his ticket to Louisville with a big effort in Saturday's Florida Derby and bring him to the Kentucky Derby with his first starter. He is trainer Jack Sisterson, and he is with me now on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Jack, appreciate it, my friend.
Thanks for having me on, Mike.
I'm excited for Saturday. I know you are, too. Tell me a little bit more about Seminole Chief coming into this year's Florida Derby.
You know, we're very excited as a whole. You know, the barn, you can just see the excitement and the vibes throughout the morning training there. They're all looking forward to Saturday. Seminole Chief's going into the race in great shape. You know, probably wasn't the route we would have picked out, you know, his previous win on the Tapita, but it was more so we wanted to kind of put a line through that bad effort in the withers that we couldn't really, you know, make up an excuse. There might have been a couple of excuses, but we're not sort of a barn to come up with many. And chatting to Brad and David, who own him, I wanted to get him back to winning ways, to give him the opportunity to run in the Florida Derby if he ran well. And we thought he ran well enough on the Tapita there to deserve a shot on Saturday.
What things did you need to see from him in that allowance win on the Tapita that you mentioned, his last victory? What things did you need to see from him, Jack, to let you know, okay, we feel like he belongs in a race like the Florida Derby?
A winning effort. You know, I said to Brad and David, you know, we've got a race there that we don't know what happened. We need to get him back to winning ways before we kind of move forward with him. And, you know, there was actually the race was carded in the condition book as a turf race, but it came off the turf. And speaking to the owners that morning, we wanted to run because the horse was training that well. And the goal was to run him in the Florida Derby if we strictly saw the winning effort, and he won well. He didn't switch leads like we would have liked to. He has to switch leads in the afternoons to make that step forward, but he's been doing it in the mornings well, and that's what we wanted to see, Mike, the winning effort, and he did so.
Hall of Famer D-Wayne Lucas made a career out of running horses in big races that didn't necessarily on paper look like they were a contender, but he'd walk away with the top prize all the time. And he told me once that you can't win it if you're not in it. So kind of the same thing here, right, Jack?
Very much so, Mike, you know. And, you know, they're only 3-1s and get this sort of opportunity to run in the races like the Florida Derby. And we're a barn that we like to run our horses when they're doing well, and Seminole Chiefs is doing great, so we're going to give them that opportunity.
You get the services of Joel Rosario. That's a pretty good get there.
Yeah, I think we're ahead of the game already when you get a rider like Joel, and no knock on anybody else, but he's a top rider and he's been in these situations before, so you know, it'd be fun to see Joel on his back on Saturday.
You said that you kind of wanted to draw a line through the withers and you didn't have any real excuse for that poor performance. It's really almost his only poor performance. He had one other one in his second career start when he was bumped at the start, so you had a legitimate excuse that day. But the Withers was a head-scratcher. When that happens, Jack, for a trainer, what do you do? Do you just kind of – are you able to move past it like you did with the allowance win, or do you kind of start tweaking things with the horse to see if you can get him back and being right?
I think first and foremost, Mike, after an effort like this, you have to physically go over the horse to make sure, you know, he's well enough to move forward with. Because you obviously watch your performance like that and you automatically think something went wrong. In this situation, he came out to the race 110% sound to move forward with. And he did it in his daily training, showed us that it was an effort that we had to put behind us pretty quick and move forward. You know, we didn't want to dwell on that poor performance. And he's a horse that he puts a lot into his daily training. And he showed us signs that, you know, it was an effort that we don't really know what happened, but let's put it behind us pretty quick. And that's when we start to look for a potential prep race for the Florida Derby. And, you know, we didn't tweak anything at all in his training, because he bounced out the race in great shape, and it wasn't the case that we had to change anything. We continued to train him as we always did as a two-year-old when we had him in Saratoga early summer. You know, he kind of trains himself, and the staff's done a great job with him.
You started by talking about how excited the barn is to watch Seminole Chief run in the Florida Derby on Saturday. What does it do, Jack, for the entire operation, not just you, but your whole team, when you have a horse like this in the barn?
A lot, Mike, because we're a small barn, and you see everything what goes on, good and bad. You know, when I'm saying bad, you know, we lose races at times, and that would be a bad day, because my staff put so much effort into their daily work and want results and, you know, work hard for that, and they love the animals. And just to have a presence in a race like this, you can feel the excitement, the buzz. I'm not sure too many of them need an alarm clock to wake up this week when they saw the entry on Saturday. We're a young barn, we've got young staff, and you know, I'm looking forward to it for them as well, because you know, opportunities like this don't come around too often. So we'll try and seize the moment and enjoy it. And, you know, hopefully we get a good result on Saturday for the barn, because they deserve it.
I'm sure that there are things that you picked up on and learned from Doug O'Neill when he was going down the road to the Kentucky Derby. You were, of course, alongside him, handling a lot of the duties as his chief assistant. Are there certain things, Jack, that you picked up on that you're using as you make your way down the road to the Derby? Maybe not even this year, but every year.
A lot, Mike. Obviously, first and foremost, the horse comes first. And if the horse is doing well, you know, take nothing away from them. And, you know, Doug would be taking a shot. I know he doesn't mind being 50-1 in a big race. And let everybody enjoy the moment. You know, it's not about, you know, myself, although I'm listed as the trainer, but I'm just a tiny part of, you know, a lot of people do a lot harder work than I do to send Seminole Chief in 110% all the Saturday. So, you know, it's very much a team effort, and we'll be going there. You know, I'd like to see the whole barn join us on Saturday, because it'll be a fun day out for them, the owners, the horse. And you know, I take a lot of work that I did with Doug, and we'll put forth it on Saturday.
Does he have to win the Florida Derby in order for you to say, okay, he belongs in the Kentucky Derby? Let's say, for example, he were to run a really close third and he runs a big effort there. Do you start thinking, all right, maybe we do belong in the Kentucky Derby?
I would suppose it would depend on the point system,
yeah.
Like. And you know how the race pans out, and you know, obviously it's in black and white. He shows speed and he's going to be forwardly placed, so we'll see how we can handle, you know, his speed effectively against grade one type of competition. You know, there's always a question mark of, you know, can he carry that speed over a distance of ground against the top 3-year-olds in the country. So To answer that question, we can't really until we see how the race pans out.
Talking with trainer Jack Sisterson here on the on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on Horse Racing Radio Network. By the way, if you missed any portion of what we're talking about now, any of our conversation regarding Seminole Chief, you can catch a replay of this entire conversation coming up in the second half of the program here on Trainer Talk today. So don't fret if you're just joining us here on the show on this edition of Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Jack, you mentioned your team and how important it is for your team to be part of this with you. Tell me about some of the people that are helping you as you make your way through your career.
Well, I've got my assistant, Carlos Pena, that actually worked for Doug while I was there years ago. And, you know, he's a great attribute to the team. And, you know, I've got great exercise riders. Amanda Oster that gallops Seminole Chief every day. I'd be big into, and this might sound silly, Mike, but each member of staff saying good morning to each other, because I like when they, you know, 3:30, 4 o'clock when the staff starts rolling in, and just to set that atmosphere early in the barn of good morning, interaction with one another. And I'm a firm believer in the horses sense that sort of vibe that's set in the barn amongst the staff, and they sort of physically respond to it. And, you know, because of my staff set that sort of atmosphere in the barn, I believe our horses perform well under it. I set the set list and, you know, the staff executes that. They've done it very well so far.
That's interesting. Horses can pick up on the vibe that they're getting from the human beings that they're surrounded by?
Absolutely. And we can see it in the way the horses act in the barn, you know. If you walk down our shed road, a lot of our horses' head will be out the stall looking, they'll be alert, and they all act like happy horses strictly because our staff sets that sort of atmosphere in the barn.
Now, Jude Feld, who used to sit alongside me here on the show, used to always say, just keep them happy. If they're doing well, just keep them happy, because happy horses will run well. And it sounds like you subscribe to the same theory.
He's exactly right. And it's kind of like you, Mike, if you wake up wanting to go to work because you enjoy it, how much better is your day going to be? And if you put that in, you know, if a horse is enjoying what he's doing at work, he's going to put forth that little bit extra effort because he's enjoying what he's doing.
Well, you're not only going to saddle Seminole Chief on Saturday in the Florida Derby. You have Vive Vu, who is going to run in the Sanibel Island Stakes. Tell me about that filly.
She's a very nice filly, Mike. She was sent over. Emmett Mullins had her in Ireland, was owned by Paul Byrne, and they knew a type of filly that would suit the U.S. You know, they've got to have speed and a good mind, and she has that and a bit more. We ran her off the plane last year, and she was actually sold privately to Kevin Bogart, who resides in California. And we give her probably 2.5-3 months just to let her acclimatize, because you typically hear of a European horse that runs and can have that bounce factor the second time that they run back, but we try to eliminate that factor, just giving her plenty of time to adapt. And each week, each month, like, she was thriving, she was putting on weight. And, you know, when we ran her in that maiden race last month, we thought she could win it, and she did. And again, she's bounced out that race in great shape, and we do think she's definitely a filly that will pick up some black tape along the way.
How long does it take you to get to know a horse when they come into your barn, and how do you go about doing that, Jack?
Well, you know, I'm fortunate, you know, if you can surround yourself with good people that advise you on horses to buy and buy the right type of horse, it's a pretty seamless transition from picking up to what this horse wants to do, doesn't want to do. And like, for instance, Emmett Mullins sent the filly over and said, this filly will be perfect from Ireland, and he was dead right about that. You know, horses have to have good minds to go on with, and if a horse has a good mind, it's a pretty quick transition to get to know one.
I'm going to put you on the spot here with this next question, because I know you can handle it. We often hear about horses that show all kinds of talent and ability, and for whatever reason, it just doesn't translate to the afternoons, and they don't live up to that that lofty billing. We also hear the other side of it, where horses maybe in the mornings don't really strike you as being a top-class type of runner, but then all of a sudden something happens or a trainer makes one move with the horse that just the light bulb goes on and the horse goes on to a really nice career. Can you think of one of those types of horses, Jack, that you've been around where it looked like at first, maybe this horse isn't going to be a whole lot, and then all of a sudden they blossomed into something special?
Well, I can tell you exactly one would be Lexitonian that won the Vanderbilt. He's a horse that just didn't really put much into his, weekly workouts. And, you know, we'd breeze him probably half from 50, 51, 52. And you'd see him physically and just say, well, he's probably not much. But as we went on with his career, that's exactly how we wanted to be trained. And, you know, we trained him light. Sometimes we'd throw in a walk there here and there just to keep him fresh. He was a sprinter. You know, we didn't have to do much with him. We kind of took the approach of less is more for him. And you'd never see a bullet workout with him, but he'd perform in the afternoons.
Isn't that a nice surprise?
It's especially when he won a Grade One with
one. Yeah, if they can get to that level, you just kind of stay out of their way, right?
That's the thing, Mike. You know, I think a lot of times we overthink things, and we probably overtrain horses a lot of times. You think, Mike, when you're overworked, guess what? You're going to look forward to a day off, rest a little bit, and the horses are the same. You know, we kind of take that approach of, do we need to back off one? Do we need to give one an extra day off? Do we need to move forward with one? And I think it goes back to just keeping them happy. And once they're happy, the results will take care of itself.
Jack, you've now trained over 100 winners since going out on your own. Congrats on reaching that milestone. I know it's the first of many boxes you're going to check off in your career. You've settled 8 greatest stakes winners. 4 of those have been in Grade Ones. Let's talk about a couple of the others. You mentioned Lexitonian winning the AG Vanderbilt at Saratoga. There was also True Timber, who won the Cigar Mile. Tell me about True Timber and that day.
It was a fantastic day, although I couldn't be there due to COVID. I actually watched it in the yard house sitting outside the paddock at Gulfstream because I wasn't able to make the trip. And he came into our barn when Kieran McLaughlin retired in great shape, and this was a perfect example of just don't get in the horse's way. We allowed him to do what he wanted and found his way. And Kieran always mentioned to me that he was a horse that liked aqueduct at one turn configuration, and we always had it in the back of our mind that year he won that race that let's point for the Cigar Mile as the year-end goal. And, you know, he prepped well in the, I forget what race it was at Keeneland, the 7-8 race. I'm drawing a blank. But anyway, he ran a good second in that race to set him up perfectly for the Cigar Mile.
That was the Lafayette Stakes at Keeneland.
Lafayette, yes.
Yep.
And he ran great there, and it was a perfect stepping stone to move forward to Aqueduct with him.
Yeah, a special win for you. You also had Vexatious that same year, winning the Grade 1 Personal Ensign. And, boy, she could really run.
She could, and that's probably one of the better horses I've been around so far in my training career. She just had a lot of speed and can carry that speed over a distance of ground. And that was a really exciting race because of Midnight Pursuit, I think, been 1-9, and her sort of profile going into a type of race like that, and even running in a personal lens, I never thought once I'd be having horses good enough to compete at that sort of level. And she obviously outran her odds, but we always thought from day one when we had her, she had a big race in her to win, and she proved this all right.
Yeah, that kind of comes back to what we were talking about earlier with taking your shot, right? You're up against a horse like Midnight Bisou. It's probably unlikely that you're going to beat her. But then again, it is Saratoga, and we know what happens at Saratoga with heavy favorites. But regardless of where it is, you don't know. These horses are not machines. Just like Seminole Chief on Saturday, you take your shot, and you hope he runs the race of his life, and you hope that the others maybe don't.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Vexatious, she ran a good second against Monomoy Girl leading up to the personal ensign, and we shipped her straight from Belmont up to Saratoga, and she really blossomed. Her colt started to dapple, and you know, you could just see she was a happy filly there in Saratoga, and it was coming back, I believe, in 3 weeks, which typically we wouldn't do. And I know we're coming back in 3 weeks of Seminole Chief, but certainly the horse was doing great, and we took our shot.
What does a horse have to show you? And I know each horse is an individual, but if you are going to bring a horse back in 3 weeks, which, by the way, back in the day was nothing. That was commonplace. Now it's kind of out of the ordinary. But if you're going to bring a horse back on, call it short rest like that, what does a horse have to show you, Jack, to let you know they're ready to go?
I think first and foremost, we look at two things. You know, we pay attention, and we pay attention to most of the appetites, which is strictly making sure the appetite is good coming out of the race. And then the energy level, just making sure the energy's at that correct level moving forward to make sure the race didn't take too much out of them. And I think if both of those are on point coming out of the race, we can move forward accordingly and run them back typically quick, because it shows signs that they've come out of the race in good shape.
I mentioned there were four Grade 1 wins on your resume. The other one came courtesy of Channel Cat in the Man of War Stakes back in 2021. Tell me more about Channel Cat and that race in the Man of War.
I was a talented horse to be around, and I have to give all the credit to John Velasquez that day of winning, because remember, he'd won the Kentucky Derby the week before, and I was kind of just newer to the East Coast. I never really knew John that well, and he came walking out into the paddock, and I shook his hand and thanked him for riding Channel Cat and congratulated him from the previous weekend's win. And he said, thanks. And he said, do you mind if I put Channel Cat on the lead? I said, John, how am I supposed to tell you what to do? You just won the Kentucky Derby. You do what you want. And true enough, he put him on the lead, and he won.
That's spectacular. It's appropriate that you would credit a rider, because I know from talking to you on previous shows that you grew up having a dream of becoming a jockey, but you grew up too fast, you got too tall, and you couldn't continue that pursuit. It's cool to hear you talk about a jockey in those terms.
Well, those guys, you know, I don't think get the credit they deserve, because a lot of things can go wrong within the minute or two that they're actually riding these horses that are traveling 40 miles an hour. And, you know, I'm a firm believer in kind of less is more when it comes to instructions. You know, they read the form, they know what to do. And I let them go out there and do what's best for the horse and themselves.
Jack, it was 20 years ago that you came to the United States. You attended the University of Louisville. Could you imagine 20 years later that your career would end up where it has?
Not at all, Mike. Not at all. And I just got to thank all the people that give me the opportunities to be able to progress and learn to potentially be in a position like this one day.
Todd Pletcher, Eddie Keneally were part of the early years of Jack Sisterson when you came to the States. You also spent some time working with Mark Toothaker and Tommy Easton with Legacy Bloodstock, and we mentioned Doug O'Neill. Do you find that now, having been around people like that, that you've taken bits and pieces from each person that you've had the chance to learn from, and that's helping you be a better trainer today?
Absolutely, Mike. You know, a better trainer, a better person, a better all the above. All the people that I worked for were fantastic trainers, fantastic bosses, and good human beings as well. You know, I try to involve all my staff, and, you know, it's a big team effort, and be that person that people want to be around, and, you know, and enjoy the wins together, and don't dwell on the losses too much, because life's too short.
I remember you telling me, too, that you played soccer at the University of Louisville. Do you get a chance to play much anymore?
No, unfortunately, Mike. I've had two knee operations and my back's a bit off and on, so I'm strictly watching soccer at the moment.
When did all that happen to us, man? How does everything hurt nowadays?
No, I never once thought I'd be that person that was going to be on the sidelines, but unfortunately I am.
That's okay. That's working out just fine for you, Jack, with all these victories. And how many horses do you have in training now?
We've 22 at the moment. We'll probably, you know, get close to 30 by the end of the springtime once all the two-year-olds come in. So I think it's a great number to move forward for the summer with.
What's the plan for the summer?
we'll head back up to Saratoga for the summer. We'll send probably a couple to Del Mar, and then we'll keep a string for the first time year-round in Florida. We've got some Florida breads that we're looking forward to. We actually run a Florida bred this afternoon, so we'll keep in that sort of program down here for the summer.
How much time, Jack, do you spend? Hopefully you end up at Churchill Downs on the first Saturday in May, too. We'll find out on Saturday. But how much time do you spend thinking about what that moment could be like if you were ever to saddle your own winner of a Kentucky Derby?
I think I'd be lying to you if I didn't say every minute of every day. You know, I think it's every trainer's goal been in that position. So, you know, you're constantly, you know, trying to work that much harder to reach that goal.
Well, I hope that you get there, man. And I hope that Seminole Chief runs a massive race for you on Saturday and you can punch your ticket and make your way to Louisville. It would be wonderful to have you there, and would be great to see him do his thing beneath the Twin Spires.
Thank you, Mike.
Jack, I really appreciate the visit, my friend. All the best. Good luck on Saturday, and I'm sure we'll be talking again soon.
Brilliant. Thanks, Mike. Have a great day.
All right, that is Jack Sisterson here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Yeah, one of those guys that's easy to cheer for, right? When you look at his resume and you see 100-plus wins. Now, yes, we've had plenty of guys on this show who have saddled, you know, 3, 4, 5,000 winners. But Jack just getting started, really, with the meat of his career, and has done just a tremendous job. You heard us talk about the four Grade 1 victories that he's amassed. Those are part of 8 graded stakes wins in his career, and he continues to just churn out good horse after good horse. Now, it's been a while. It's been 3 years since he's won a graded stakes. Doesn't mean that Jack Sisterson has forgotten how to train, and I say that about all of the trainers that join me on the program. They go through cycles like this. He was red hot when he first burst onto the scene after leaving Doug O'Neill and going out on his own, and now he's hoping to get back to those winning ways and the greatest stakes. Now, is Seminole Chief good enough to beat some of those contenders on Saturday? Who knows? Who knows? But Jack spent a lot of time talking about taking that shot. He said Doug O'Neill, his mentor, wasn't afraid to be 50-1 in a big race. And that paid off in a big way for Doug many, many times. We'll see if it pays off for Jack with Seminole Chief coming up on Saturday afternoon. My thanks to everyone for being with me here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton today. My thanks to Jack Sisterson. My thanks to my producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington studios. If you missed any portion of the program, just head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can listen to the podcast whenever you have some time, and you can do that, too, on every podcast platform and do it with all of our shows. I'm Mike Pena. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton.
Nominate now for this year's Fasig Tipton Selected Yearling Sales. The July Sale. A strong market for precocious and athletic yearlings that attract the sport's leading end users. Last year, 40% of yearlings sold brought $100,000 or more. The 103rd Saratoga Sale. The crown jewel of American yearling sales, Saratoga set new sale records for the second year in a row, including the highest price yearling sold in the world in 2023.
Ty's upstairs, $4 million even.
New York Bred Yearlings, the number one marketplace for New York breads, held during the Saratoga race meet. Selected sales, superior results. Visit selectedyearlings.fasigtipton.com to nominate now and rise above the crowd at our 2024 Selected Yearling Sales.
It's time to get ready for the 2024 Thoroughbred season at Woodbine Racetrack, the number one turf track in North America. Season runs from April to December with over $62 million in purses, with an industry-leading stakes program including 2 Canadian Classics, the Grade 1 Million Dollar Rico Woodbine Mile and the Million Dollar King's Plate. Woodbine offers top safety-rated racing and training services, plus world-class facilities. Make Woodbine your home turf this season. Learn more at woodbine.com.
Perennial leading consigner Eddie Woods once again offers a strong consignment at this year's OBS March 2-Year-Old and Training Sale, March 12th to the 14th. With juveniles by promising freshman sires, authentic, Complexity, Echo Town, Game Winner, Global Campaign, Higher Power, Improbable, Instagram, McKinsey, and Promises Fulfilled, you'll be sure to find your next winner at the Eddie Woods Consignment. Visit eddiewoods.com.
There's thrills around every turn in Allendale Beach at Gulfstream Park with live thoroughbred racing every Wednesday through Sunday during our championship meet. It's peak season in South Florida and time for the Grade 1 Florida Derby on Saturday, March 30th. Join us in the Flamingo Room, Carousel Club, and Ten Palms Restaurant for an unforgettable afternoon of world-class racing and entertainment. For stakes schedules, tickets, and more, head to GulfstreamPark.com.
Well, Phasic's family, basically. Some of the guys that work here I've known for 30 years. I just felt really supported, and they're great communicators. They try to help in whatever you do.
Phasic Tipton's has a sale for every market, every segment in the industry. There's multiple opportunities where you're gonna have plenty of good buying and selling situations.
Great customer service. I'm not only a buyer with them, but I'm a seller, and I've always been well taken care of.
There's a lot of different things that sometimes you need at a sale, and Phasic Tipton is there every step of the way.
They show year after year that they're ethical and they're fair, and they enjoy what they do. But when you're around people that have a combination of all those things, you know, you can't lose,